Okay, tonight is our last year in the series for this year. Obviously, Chatzkas Sabbatim is an extremely rich limud. By popular consent, we started the topic of Naskin Rababa last week, so I want to continue and analyze that and discuss in particular one perspective that comes out of that. So let's discuss this Gemara. This is one of the most famous cases and topics anywhere, and particularly in Chatzkas Sabbatim. So the Gemara says as follows. It starts on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We read it last week, but we're just going to run through it again. Hahu Dama Lechavrei, my boy is Bahai Ara. This is 3, 6, 9 lines from the bottom of the page. That's the top of the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. And you work up, it's 9 lines up. Hahu Dama Lechavrei, my boy is Bahai Ara. What are you doing in my land? Amalei, the guy responds and says to him, Minach Zavanis. What do you mean, what am I doing in your land? I'm in your land because I bought the land, I purchased the land from you, and not only that, but I've been living there for 3 years. So the Gemara says, the Achla Tlas Shani. Normally, what he would want to do, right, and if he did it, so it would be an uncontroversial case, would be he would want to bring two witnesses, and established that indeed he's been present for 3 years. And if he did that, he would win the case because he has a taina, he has a claim, he has the proper, he has the requisite raya, and he would win, plain and simple. Every one of our cases in Chatzkas Sabbatim is meant to highlight a different issue. So rarely do you have the case where the guy says, I've bought the property from you, I've been there for 3 years, and here are my witnesses, and they corroborate what he says. Right? There's always some sort of a problem. That's how we're building up a database to figure out, you know, what is the nature, the true nature of these various components. So in this particular case, the wrinkle is that he was only able to produce a single witness that corroborated his story. His story about being there for 3 years is corroborated not by two, but by one aid. Okay. So the Gemara says, Sovra Abonin Kameda Baya, there's only one aid. We should treat this case like we treat the case of Naskar Rav Abba, the silver of Rav Abba. That's literally what the words mean. What is that? So it's a famous case. And the Gemara goes on to elaborate. There was a certain man who grabbed a piece of silver from the premises of his friend as he went into his friend's home. Right, or he took it from his hand, whatever it is, and he grabbed this piece of silver. So the Gemara says, also the Kavod Rav Ami, they took this case to Rav Ami. Haviyosef Rav Abba Kame, Rav Abba was present, was sitting there, and this is what happened. He brought a single aide who testified that he witnessed this fellow grabbing this piece of property, this piece of silver. Now again, if you had two Aidim, right, so then the rule would be that because of the principle of Chazakah, Kol Ma Shetachas Yadada Marei Shalo, whatever person holds on to, whatever he possesses, is presumed to be his. So had there been two witnesses, that would have been the end of the case. In other words, he would have been obligated to pay the money. He would have been obligated to repay the silver item. Unless he could prove his claim, which was the Dichatzi, if he could somehow prove that the other guy took it from him or that it really belonged to him, that would be a different story. But just the claim alone, the Dichatzi, when two witnesses, right, attest to his act of seizing the property, would not have won. The problem is that there aren't two witnesses, there's only one witness. Right? Now, had there been no witnesses, then we would have believed him when he said, in chatzi vididi chatzi, as the Gemara will explain, because he has a migu. He could have said, lo chatafti. The guy says, this fellow just came to my property and grabbed a piece of silver. And he says, I grabbed it, but I'm retrieving my own object. So if there were no witnesses at all, we would believe him. Because he could have said, with impunity, I don't know what he's talking about, I never grabbed anything of his. No, it's his word against my word. I'm kofer bakol. I deny the whole thing. And I'm potter. So migun di bayamar, since he could have said, I'm exempt by virtue of the fact that I deny it, we believe him when he says, I did seize the property, but I have an explanation. One which exonerates me. The problem is, here we don't have two witnesses, but we do have a witness, and what do? That's exactly what the Gemara talks about. So the Gemara says, Om Rabbi, How are they going to act in this case? L'shalem, so we say that he's obligated to pay back the silver like a trei sahadi. There are two witnesses, exactly what we're talking about. L'patre, shall we say he's completely exempt? He had sahada. Can't do that either, because there's a single aide who testifies that presumably he seized property illegally. L'shtaba, this becomes, of course, the key question. Let him take a shua. The problem is that he admits that he seized this fellow's property. The kingdomber, the chatzba, is the key line, which we'll go back to. Once he said, I grabbed the property, have like a gazlan. He is like a thief. Right? And therefore what?
Can't swear.
We don't know exactly what that means. Now, there is a Mishnah. I'll just tell you preliminarily again that there's a Mishnah in Masachet Shavuos, which parallels the Mishnah in Masachet Sanhedrin, also in Masachet Rosh Hashanah, I might add, and that is listing the Psule Shavua. The Psule Shavua are parallel to the Mishnah in Sanhedrin in Rosh Hashanah about the Psule Eidos. Right? There are people who are disqualified from being witnesses. Somebody's a thief, he can't be a witness. And most of those people are also disqualified from taking a Shavua in Des. So the simple reading of the Gemara, when you read it without any kind of further analysis, that the Gemara is saying that if somebody is a chot, if somebody has been proven to be chot, that he sees property, then he is a gaz, how like a gazlan, and a gazlan is pasul l'shul. And that indeed is the interpretation of many Rishonim, including Tosis, we'll see in just a moment. Tosis on Lamedal of the days has that interpretation. If you have this girsa, that's a simple reading of the Gemara. Why do I say it that way? It sounds so defensive and sounds like I'm so tentative about the whole thing. What's the problem? The problem is that this is not comparable to that rule. The Mishnah Sanhedrin in connection to Eidos and the Mishnah in Shavuos in connection to Shua might refer to a situation where someone has been established as a gazlan in a particular case, in a din Torah. Once he has that status, so he is excluded, he's disqualified from Eidos, and he's also disqualified from taking a Shavua. However, that's not what we're dealing with here. Here we're dealing with a situation of analyzing or assessing or praising his own behavior in this case. Now, from a structural, formal point of view, right, the presumption is that he's a gazlan, because he's taking property from the person who has possession. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that he has an explanation which he's willing to share, and on the contrary, by means of the Shua, he'll be able to clarify that what you think you saw, right, which is him the gazlan, is not really true at all. So how can you compare denying him the possibility by means of Shua to clarify his situation, to resolve his situation, to establish that he's not a gazlan? How can you compare that with the Mishnah that says that an established gazlan in a different case, somebody who's been tried and convicted and, you know, pronounced by the court as a gazlan, cannot take a shua? That's exactly the point. The point is that here there's a catch 22. If you let him swear, he'll tell you why what you think you're seeing is not what you're seeing. And isn't that what we think the ultimate purpose of a shua? To clarify the situation? For that reason, it's not a simple matter at all. But the Gemara does still say, Havalei Kegazlan. So number one, it's important to note that there are Gaonim already who did not have the Girsa Havalei Kegazlan. They dropped that line, but they didn't have that line. even the Rishonim who have the line, in some cases, go out of their way to dilute its significance. Because they too are bothered by this question, how can you compare these two examples? And even more than that, not just that it's not comparable, in addition to that, one would think that the whole point of the Shavua here is to establish that there's no comparison. It's to establish this person's innocence and to clarify what it is that he's doing so that he's not really a Goslin. So, for example, Rashi in Shavuos on the Rashbam here, when they talk about this line, say basically all it means is just like a Goslin can't swear, this person can't swear. But not because he's a Goslin. Kigoslin Kafadimion, but for other reasons, now what are those other reasons? So that happens to be equally as challenging. And that's what we were talking a little bit at the end of the last time, and I want to clarify and continue with that today. If you look at the Gemara, at the Rashbam, so the Rashbam says as follows, Lishtaba, Hefa Shvua, Sha'id Mechaibo, Heni Yachal. He can't take the Shvua. Dumbo the Dechataf. Because he admits that he grabbed the object. Now, if you have the Girsa and you mean the Girsa, you should explain. He admits that he grabbed the object, or there's an aid that he grabbed the object, therefore he's a Goslin, and a Goslin can't be Nishba. That's not what the Rashbam says. Rashbam says, Ha'ed mechayvav en yachol, ta'amod yudachotav, ta'ed mechayvav lishava shalokotav, lahakhish es ha'ed. The problem is that the aid demands that he swear to contradict his story. And he can't do that because he doesn't deny that story. He only denies the implications of the story. The story itself is makabel. Yeah.
On the other cases you gave in Sanhedrin and Shavuos, he wasn't able to make a shavua because he was already adjudicated to be a goblin.
Right.
How did he get to be adjudicated even before he had a chance to offer an explanation by
me? I don't know. He may have offered. That's a totally separate din Torah. He offered every explanation that he could in that case. The court found against him in that case. There's no catch 22 in the other case. He was accused. Maybe there were two witnesses who saw him stealing an object. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
He's established as a, you know, the courts found him to be a Goslin in another case. Now somebody who's a Ghana for a Goslin, right, is not allowed to be an aid, nor is he allowed to take a shul. Now, what is that irrevocable? I mean, that's where tshuva and other things, you know, come into play. You can, absolve yourself of that status, but that's a different story. But that's what we're talking about here. Here we're talking about, in this case, we won't let him, the evidence against him is based on this case. The whole case is to assess whether he's... So the whole point is that he's claiming he's not a thief. He's claiming that he's retrieving his own property. They're accusing him of being a thief. So we're not going to let him clarify in this case that he's not a thief because he's a thief and therefore he can't swear? That's the catch 22. That doesn't apply in other cases. Okay, now, the Rashbam's own explanation, I say it goes out of his way to avoid the Kigazan, as we'll see, but by doing so he has to come up with something else, and what he comes up with is extremely innovative in its own right. Now what he says is really what Rashi says in Shavuos, and what the Rambam says, I think I read it last week in Hilchos, I don't know if we have access to it at the moment, but the Rambam in Hilchos Toin Benitan Perek Dalid Halacha Ches. And I'll explain just in a minute. So the Rashbam goes on to say, "Tahochi mash makra, lo yakom edechad biish lekal avon lekal chatos." Pasuk says in Devarim, right? Lo yakom edechad biish lekal avon lekal chatos. The shalei mamon, right? When it comes to paying out money, right? So an edechad is not comparable to shnei eden, to kofer, but eid mechaybo lo yakom. When the aid, right, is obligates him to swear, and he, right, denies the story told by the aid echad,
So lo yakum eidechad biish. So in that situation, the eidechad doesn't have the power to be mechayev him mamon. Aval kamu l'shvua l'hatchesha sa'ed. This is now. This is, if you notice, not, this is the Rashbam's rereading of the Limud. The Limud is only the pasuk says lo yakum eidechad biish. L'palavon l'kolchatas. The Limud, the real Limud is. L'kol avon l'kol chatas lo kam avon kam hu l'shvua. An eidechad cannot be mechayev you avon and chatas, an onesh or a korban or money, right? What can he do? Avon kam hu l'shvua. But notice how the Rashbam has he's kind of interpolated a couple of words to reinterpret based on what? Not based on the drasha, not based on the pasuk. Based on this Gemara. Because no one can figure out in this Gemara, why will you not let this guy swear? It seems like a perfect situation for him to be Nishba. I mean, what better, you know, opportunity for Shvua to be effective than to let him clarify, let him tell his story and to explain to us why what we think we're seeing, right, is really a justified action and not an act of theft at all.
He swears that the other guy becomes
plus later. No. No. I mean, it could be his word against his word. I mean, it doesn't prove anything. But at least, we won't act on it, right? It doesn't prove anything. It's only my word against your word. Right. But the point is that he has to at least accuse him of being a false aid, right? So if you notice what Rashi, what Rashbam did, was he interpolated into these words La Yakum. And then he added in, right? Bimokom shehu kofer or makhish as divrei ha'ed. Right? Those extra words don't appear in the drasha, but that's his interpretation of the drasha based on this gemara. However, right? If he's willing to be makhish as ha'ed, then he's kam l'shua. That's what he says. All these are extra words. Just see, he did it very subtly. I already do with the language of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Kegazon. That's what he explains. The Gabihakshvua apostle, Kegazon, it's a koshvuos. He, to this shvua, is puzzle, like a gazlan, is puzzle to other shvuas. You're not saying that his psul to this shvua is midin gazlan. Just like a gazlan can't swear for its reason, he can't swear for his reason. Interesting. Now, let's say the name of Lishtaba. Didi Chatav, Shein Du Shvua Hamotel HaSalav. He can't take the Shvua that he wants to take, that would clarify his situation, right, which is consistent with what he's saying. Didi I'm describing my, I'm seizing my own property, because that's not the shvua that the eidechad is mechayev in. Ule mifter b'lo klumi afshar, to let him off scot free because he can't be nishba, right? But there also aren't two eidim that he can't do. Shari hu rakol chosho migu, the migu which was that. I could claim that believe me when I say I'm retrieving my own objects. I could have said I didn't do anything. I never grabbed the. I can't say that either because of the eidechad. That's the Rashbam. I say the Rambam is very similar, except that the Rambam went even well beyond all of this. The Rambam in Perek Dalet, Hilchos Tohen V'Nitzan, Halach Ches, has a triple formulation. You have the Rambam? Oh, thank you. Yeah, okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. So, the Rambam here in Perek Dalet, Halach Ches, Manali B'Adachos, has interesting cases. The guy says, you owe me $100. Baharei Eidechad made olav. Right? And there's an Eidechad, a single aid, who also testifies, corroborating the claim that Reuven owes Shimon $100. Okay, Shimon says, Reuven, you owe me $100. Levi says, I'm an Eidechad, I can support that claim. Oh. Banitan Omer, what does Reuven say? He's the defendant. What does he say? He says, "Kainu, it's true. Havala tachayivli keneged osamana, but you owe me $100, right? I owe you $100 in a loan, and you owe me $100 in a loan, and they're both due. I'm not going to pay you, because the loan should just cancel each other out. That's the claim of Shimon. Whoever it was, yeah. So the Rambam says, that's the conclusion of our Gemara here. Just look back to our Gemara here for one more second. So the Gemara says, what do you do in the case of Rav Abba? We're stuck. You can't force him to pay. Our two ways. You can't let him off scot-free. There's one name. You can't let him be Nishba, because that's our mystery, right? Either because the Gazlan, according to one view, or because he has to be Makish Shesla'ed, according to the other view. And we won't let him. So what do we do? So the Gemara says, that's what Rav Abba said. Amalan Rababa have a Mukhuya Shua, Shaniya Khalishava, call him Mukhuya Shua Shaniya Khalishava, Mishalim. Right? He owes a Shua, but he can't take the Shua because we won't let him take the Shua. And a Shua which cannot be addressed is one which turns into a Khiv Mamon. Mitok, Shaino Yakalishava, if you can't swear, Mishalim. So this idea is what Brahm's talking about in this case. Now this is a little bit of a different case. Here it's not a case where he grabbed anything. It's a case where he claims he owes $100, and the other fellow says, it's true, but you owe me $100. It's a wash. So what's he going to do in this case? And it's an Eidachar. So the Rambam explains, why is it Mekhul Yeshua? Why is it Mekhul Yeshua? Why is he Mekhul Yeshua Shani Chol Yeshua Mishalim? Because the fellow is demanding $100 based on the halakha, and he has an aide who supports him. Now his response is not that the aide is a liar, but that there is additional transactions. In this case, it isn't even additional circumstances, right? An additional transaction which this aide knows nothing about, nor is he obligated to know anything about it. Right, which just changes the changes the equation. So that's the Rambam's addressing. Why can't he take a shua and say, in, yes, I owe $100 to him, but he owes $100 to me, therefore I don't have to pay him anything. The Rambam says, Sha'arehu moda b'meshahed bo ha'ed, because he's admitting to what the aid testifies. Be'ena nishba b'hados eid achad nishba ha'chiyakhish etfa aid. This is a rule of the Rajmam, right? That the Rambam came to on his own as well. Meaning, in order to be Nishba, you have to contradict the aid. The Yachpor Be'eduso, the Rambam says it in a triple formulation, as if to emphasize how much of a Kiddush this is. Yachish es ha'ed, deny the aid. Yachpor Be'eduso, deny his testimony. The Yishava al Kfiratso, and swear on his, swear about this denial. Right? Three different ways to say one thing. Okay? Lefikach, the Rambam says even further, Shtar Shiesh Bo Eid Achad, this is a trickier case. Beton Sheparo, what if you have a shtar? Contract. And in the contract, you don't have the usual two witnesses. Talked about that a lot last year. Right? You have a contract, and it's signed by two witnesses. Eid Echasima. Instead, you have a shtar, contract, and it's signed by one witness. Ah. Now, if the shtar is signed by two witnesses, and there's a dispute whether the loan was paid back. In other words, the shtar, the contract says that there was a transaction, a loan of $100. The malva brings his shtar to Bezdin, says, I want to collect. The lova says, what do you mean you want to collect that page back? What happens in that case? Now, if it's a nova alpe, if there's no contract, so even if the lova says, it's true, there was a loan, but I paid you back, then he's for sure believed. If there is a contract, that's the principle we talked about so many times, of shtarcha biyadi, my boy. It means that we say, if it's really true that the loan was paid back, how come you don't have a receipt? Or, how come he still has the shtar? And that we don't believe him. we don't believe the loan, but to say that he paid back a loan, well, there's an outstanding shtar. Now, what happens if the shtar doesn't have two witnesses, but one witness? That's a tricky case. We don't have that case in the Gemara. Right? Now, what are we going to do about that case? So the Rambam is talking about that case. The Rambam says, in that case, lefikach, therefore, shtar sheyesh bo edecha, you have a contract with a single aid, the ta'an shepero, and the other guy says, I paid you back. But he still has the shtar. The chain, or kafran shebal of edecha, right? The ta'an shepara, olchzartiv hapikado, or a guy says, I paid back, or I gave back the deposit, somebody gave something for him to watch, he said, I gave it back to you already. Now the edecha in all these cases doesn't address whether he gave it back. All he says was, I was there when the object was deposited. I was there when the object was lent, or when the money was lent. Right? So in all these cases, says the Rambam, in all these cases he has a shvua, in all these cases he can't take the shvua, and therefore in all these cases, mishalim, why can't he take the shvua? Because in all these cases, the shvua would not deny the aid. Even in the case of the aid achad, that's the trickiest case of all. That's what Rambam said to Fikach. He knew that it was a little tricky. Why is that a tricky case? Because what does the aid say in the case of the shtar? He really only says, right? But the what he's being used for is that the loan is still outstanding, because the aid echad doesn't deny that he lent money. Right? The real din Torah, did he repay? Now on the repayment, oh, that's like the rest of Natsuka Rabbah, except for one difference. On the repayment issue, right, the aid echad would seemingly be irrelevant too. Why does it work at all? Ah, so this gets back to last year a little bit, those who were here last year. Last year we talked a lot about Reish Lakish. Eidim achasum malashtar, nasa kamishin achorizu simbedez. We have Eidim and Ashtar, right? So we treat them as if they're real, living, breathing witnesses, right? And we expand, actually, their scope of what they're telling us beyond sometimes what they actually say, because they don't really know what happened. I mean, you could find two witnesses on a contract before the halva took place. They don't really know 100% that there even was a loan. All they really know was that there was the intention that there should be a loan. For all we know, the contract was signed and sealed, right? And then they went off, and they don't even know that it was delivered. We know it was delivered only because we put together the fact that the shtar is in the hands of the malva, and it was created by the lova, how did it get to the malva? Must be that they delivered, they went through with it. So one of the expanded powers of Ein Shebishtar is with respect to the problem of paraiti. Shtar could be ani, my boy. At least that was Reb Chaim's understanding of it. Namely, when we say, oh, if there's a contract, we don't believe you that you repaid the loan, according to the Rambam, that's not just based on an umdana, a probability of some sort, or chazaka. Right? It's based on the Eidus Shebishtar. The Eidus Shebishtar say, all things being equal, lo parua. So when you have an Eid Echad, it's a little bit of a tricky situation. What's Eid Echad saying now? Vis-a-vis this case, lo parua. It's not repaid. Right? What's the Baldavar saying? Paraiti, I paid. So in this case, it's not really true. But what's the Rambam been doing all along? The Rambam's been saying the principle of Naskar Ababa, like the Rashbam, is that when you take a shvua, you have to deny the aid. You have to call him a liar. You have to deny his story. But here you are denying his story, because the only reason that he's relevant as an aid echad in the shtar is because based on his presence, we say lo parua, the loan has not been paid. And what's he claiming in court? Paraiti, I paid it. So let him take the shua to say paraiti. The case of Daskad Rababa is the Edom are saying chataf. And he can't swear because he can't say lo chatafti, because he's really saying in chatafti v'didi chatafti. I did grab it, but it's mine. Not that I didn't grab it. In the first case of the Rambam, which is a case of what? You owe me $100. Yes, I do. But you owe me $100. It's a wash. Right? And the Eidechot says, I know that he owes him $100. I don't know about the other part. Again, you can't take the Shvuah to clarify, because you're not contradicting the Eid. He says about the loan number one, and your excuse is that there's a loan number two. So you can't take the Shvuah against the Eid. But in the case, then Rav says, Lepikach, therefore, this will apply to the rule of Shtar Chub Yadi, my boy, you have an Eidechot, Bishtar, right? You can't deny, you can't swear against him either, and therefore you'll have to pay Mitoshani Khalichov Mishan. Why not? Here, the aid is being made to say Lo Paraiti, Lo Parata, sorry, you did not pay. And what he wants to say in court with the Shua is Pratiha, I paid you. What's the problem?
That's
based on Reish Lakish. But why is he? Why is he relevant at all?
Huh?
Why is he relevant at all?
Because the loan was made.
So, but why does that prove that he did that? It wasn't repaid.
It doesn't prove it.
So then why should he not be able to be naman on his own?
What?
Let's say there were two aidim in the contract.
So then you have to pay.
Why?
Because the
Shtar
has a greater
relevance
than he said I paid it.
So is the
Adam... Why don't you have the Shtar in your hand?
If you want to say that's just an umdina,
right.
So then the question is, does it apply to an Eidach? Let's say you have a Shtar of Eidach. It's an interesting question. In other words, if you have a Shtar of Eidim, so you say Shtar from Yoni my body. You should have ripped up the Shtar. Is that true for a Shtar of Eidach? It's less damaging because there's only one aid. But if it's true, then you don't need this chiyuv shua. You should just say, "Oh, how could he claim that he paid? He left the shtar in the other guy's hand. That proves he's a liar." Then there's nothing to do with the shua. The chiddush of the Rambam is telling you the fact that he's an aid echad and not shnayim aidim is important. This is one of Reb Chaim's best rayas that it's not just an umdana. When we say Shtar from Yoni Matoi. But the Edom and the Shtar themselves that establish in their name, because they're not kind of living, breathing people, but as Chetzeshal is Edus. Because otherwise, why is the Rambam talking about it in terms of Eidechad? What does that have to do with Nastra Baba? What does that have to do with the Kiv Shua that you can't address? And okay, Yeshua, you have to say one of two things from an Umdana point of view. You say, listen, he shouldn't be leaving a damaging piece of evidence in the other guy's hands, a damaging piece of evidence like a shtar, even with a single aid, it's also damaging. Then you should treat it from that point of view, like a shtar b'shneidim. And to explain, you should say, oh yeah, therefore he has to pay. Not because of mitok shenei chol shavim b'shali. Because shtar chabiyani my body. Or you could say the opposite. You could say, you know what? If I leave a damaging piece of evidence in your hands, namely a contract with two witnesses, that is pretty suspicious behavior. So you're not going to believe me. But it's only got 8 echad in it. Not such a terrible thing. And then you should say that what? That it's not damaging. There's no problem. Shtar chabiyani my boy. The Edom themselves say nothing about the piron. They really only speak about the hava. So you should say that he should be nemon. Mimanashach. From an umdana point of view, you should go all or nothing. You should either say shtar beit echad is like shtar v'shnei edim, or shtar beit echad is like shnar is like milva balpeh. But to say that there's a chi of shvua, but you can't address it, is a remarkable chiddush of the Rambam. Now, how do we explain that chiddush? That's where Chaim came in and explained, oh, that's what we mean when we talk about Reish Lakish. We mean that the Edim signed in a shtar, right, are like a blank check, what I called them last year, a blank check of Edus. You can read things into it in their name. Right? But if that's true, so now I'm asking a different question. And that is true, according, it's got to be true according to the Rambam. Reb Chaim seems right about that. So then what's the problem of Naskar Ababa, let him be Nijva and say, the only reason you're saying that they're relevant is because when they're signed in the Sharts, as if the Aden themselves are saying, Lo Parata, so here it's an Eid Echad saying, Lo Parata, so let him swear against the Eid Echad and say, Paraiti. That's not comparable to the case where he says, oh, you owe me, but I owe you. I'm sorry, I owe you, but you owe me. Or, In Chatzim, we did in Chatzim. So what's going on here? Ah, I think the answer is exactly, it's exactly the same answer. We just need to, and then it actually becomes a stronger point, which is, according to the Rambam, what's the principle of Naskar Ababa? You have to deny the aid, and the aiders. Right? Basically, you have to call the guy a liar. It has to be a contest between him and me. Meaning, if I'm telling the truth, he's a liar. So it's true that basically, I want to be Nishba and say, Praticha, I paid you. And they now have the star saying, Lo Parata. But, let's say we would believe you to say, through the Shvuah, say Praticha. Have you really turned this Eidechot B'Shtar into a liar? No, because he doesn't really say Lo Parata. He only says Lo Parata because of this magical din of Reish Lakish. As a living, breathing person, are you calling him a liar? Are you saying that his Eidus is a lie? Again, Mashal Ma Davidoma, this I mentioned last year again, but which is, take the case of Sharkhan Gan and my body where you have two Eidus. Right, so you have a contract. It's signed by two witnesses. Right? And we say, therefore, we don't believe you when you say Praticha. And we're saying Koin Rav Chaim, not just because it's an Umdana. The Umdana is Eidus. The Eidim say Lo Praticha. Now, let's say two Eidim came along. Let's say, in other words, the Baldur, the Lova, brought two witnesses. It's true. There's an outstanding star who's careless, or trusting, as the case may be. But I have two witnesses that I paid. Will you believe the two witnesses that he paid? Even though there's a star? Absolutely. There's no debate about that. If he can prove with witnesses that he paid, right? Exactly. So how come? Why not say it's Trey or Trey? The two witnesses in the Shtar are saying Lo Praticha. The two witnesses now, oral witnesses or whatever, are saying he paid. The answer is, because this whole magical Eidus HaBishtar, this whole din, this whole kiddush of Eidus HaBishtar is only as long as we don't know that it's not true. It's all based on, right, reading into, it's that extra license of the blank check, you're allowed to read that in the name of the Eidim. But if I can prove to you that that's not part of the blank check, for example, that Eidim will come along and they'll say, by the way, we know for a fact that he paid him. So we won't say it's Trey. We'll say, Igloi Nosa, that these Eidim are not testifying about Lo Parata. So that's exactly what happens in the Eid Echad. If we'll allow him to be Nishba and say, Praticha, right, because the Eid Echad is saying Lo Praticha, so we're going to walk away and say, like you said before, right, oh, he's calling him a liar, so maybe he'll be Pasul Eidus. That far we don't go, because there's not enough evidence. But he's calling him a liar, he's saying he should be Pasul Eidus. Is he saying that the aid signed in the Shtar should be Pasul Eidus? Absolutely not. Right? It's not personal at all. So once again, what's lacking? Hakhashas Gabra, and that's why maybe the Rambam, remember I mentioned the triple formulation? Like Lahakhish as Aid, Lachbor Beeduso. Well, I'm going to go again. Aid Nishma Badas Eidachad, Nishma Ache Yachish as Aid, Yichbor Beeduso, that's right. Beeshaval Kthiraso. You don't have that in Eid Echad either. So according to the Rambam, it's actually a perfect case. And where does it all come from? How do they know this rule? Again, it just says in the Torah, Lo Yachom Eid Echad L'Kol Ovan U'Kol Chatos. And then it says in the Sifrei, L'Kol Ovan U'Kol Chatos U'Eino Kam, Havukam U'Lashua. Where do we get this rule, all of a sudden, that Rambam has in the extreme, Rashbam and Rashi a little bit more moderately, by the way, the Raivit denies the whole thing, the Ravon denies the whole thing, I'll show you in a second, the Bali tells us to take literally the Goslin issue. They don't like this. They don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. Right? It's counterintuitive. It's a very big kiddush, meaning The Eid Echad is Mechayev Shua, so let you clarify, meaning you have the opportunity now, or the obligation, to clarify your status on the basis of a Shua Doraisa. Why does the Shua Daska have to call, you know, the other, has to be a struggle to the end, you know, between the Eid and the Nishba, and the Nido? Why? Where does it all come from? A way to read our Gemara. What is wrong in Nafkar about why can't the guy say in Chatzi B'didi Chatzi? If you don't like the rule that this is exactly comparable to a real Psul Gazlan, why can't he do it? So that's what the Raman adds. Maisa Be'echad, this is all the same halacha, this is all in halacha ches. Maisa Be'echad Shechatav Lashon Ketzef Mekadero Bipnei Echad. It happened, one guy grabs piece of silver from his friend in the presence of an Eid Echad. That's exactly Nafkad Rababa. The Omar, Achaka Chatafti, the Shali Chatafti, I grabbed it, but it's mine, I'm retrieving it. The Omar Chachamim, Arizim Echad Shoen Echad Shalim Shalim. The Chen Kolki Antabaza. That's the Rambam. Now, if you look in Hilchos Malva Velova, Perkid Dalid Halacha Yud, Rambam has this again. Hotzi olav shtarko beid echad, same halacha. Right, one man produces a contract with a single aid on it. The lova toin paraiti, lova says, I don't owe you anything anymore. I paid you back. Harez the mechuyev shua ben yachul shalom mishalim. This is the Rambam's chiddush, right? He has to pay, but he has to pay not because of shtarko yadi my boy, but because of mitov shen yachul shava. The Shalim, same Rambam as earlier Rambam. Ton v'omar yishava li shalo piraitiv. If the guy says, it's called the shtabali de lo pratich, hare it's a nishva. Afilo hayu b'shtar shne'edim, omar yishava li shalo piraitiv, hare it's a nishva. Kamo shabiyarno. The chen hor rabosai, the Rambam continues, halacha yin aleph, my rabbein paskin, shakofer b'milva, alpan b'bezdin, he was accused, you owe me $100, and the guy denied it all. Ubay Echad Shalava, and then Echad comes along and he says, he's lying. He did take out a loan. Hareza Yishava Shua Satora. He's saying I didn't borrow money. The other guy is saying he did borrow money. So Zachiv Shua, that's Shua. He can call him a liar, right? It's my reputation against his reputation. It's a struggle to the end. That's a classic case where the Shua will work. But Chazav Yamar, Kain, Hayali, Lavisi, Uparaiti, let's say he says, oh yeah, you're right. I forgot, I didn't mean it. I borrowed the money, I paid the money. Again, if right away he had said, let's say it was a Milbal Pet, right? It was two Aiden. So you owe me money. No star. And the guy said, I paid you back. He'd be believed. But that's not the case. Here the case is, he said, I owe you money. You owe me money. And he said, no, not true. Then the Eid Echad shows up. He says, oh yeah, I paid you back. Right? So now that he said that, oh, nischayev li mimakom acher. Or, yeah, I owe you money. But you owe me money. It's a wash. Right? Harezim b'chuyi shua v'en yachal yishavim b'shalim. That's the Rambam. Same Rambam. And the Ravid here also says he doesn't like it. Ani afarish mikimin she amar betchila lo lavisi kilo lo paraiti. The problem isn't the shua, the problem is the rule. Kol amar lo lavisi kilo lo amar lo paraiti. Right? Meaning when I said I didn't borrow money from you, so that's like hodas balbin saying I never paid you back. So now I'm going to turn around and say I paid you back. It's a stira to what I said earlier. Otherwise, it could have been. There's no such rules as the Ravid that you have to makhis shasaid per se.
Dashon shen schayit shua, havelim chuy shua nechadisham v'shalein.
cause of a whole delay, so Rishon Ruva, etc. And the Rebbe doesn't buy this explanation of the Rambam. But this is the Rambam. If you look in Perek Dalet Uchaz Gzela, there too the Rambam has Naskir Rav Abba, and he calls it again, he quotes the whole case, he says the whole story with the Naska, and the Gemara. There too he expands on this principle. Points out the Rambam is very into this idea. So what is this idea? So where we get it from, we know. What is the idea? The idea seems to be, all things being equal, goes back to the limud of the Rashba. Right? So normally that's interpreted as saying that Eid Echad is not two Eidim. Right? And therefore it has limited impact. Right? Two Eidim can be Mechayev Mamon, two Eidim can be Mechayev Nisa, Onesh, Chatas. Eid Echad is not Eidus. And consequently you can't. That's the end of story. The way the Rashbam and the Rambam are interpreting, right, it ends up being a little bit different. In a way, the Torah is like tantalizing us, and it's basically telling us that Eid Echad could be Mechayev, Avon, Mechatas, and Mamon, etc. Except that there's a vulnerability, there's a weakness. And that is a way to neutralize an Eid Echad. That is, if you shoot them out of the water, if you go for the jugular, if you destroy, or you attack at least, his reputation, as you say, I don't accept the Eid Echad. If you attack his credibility, and the credibility of his Eidus, then you have a defense. It's not that Eid Echad, per se, doesn't have the capacity of the Kol Avon or the Kol Chatas. It does. But you have a single defense. But if you don't use that defense, and if he's still standing, if he's a credible Eid Echad, we'll always treat him like Shnai. That is the view of the Rambam, seems to be the view of the Rambam and the Rashba. And it goes back to not only just that Limud, but the Gemara in Masechet Shavuos. And the Gemara says, "Kol makom sheshnayim mechayvin osam mamon, Eid Echad mechayv oshua." So again, there are two opposite ways to read that Gemara, with quite a few shades in between. The opposite ways are that, like we said before, layachom Eid Echad lekalavad ulkochatos. This is about the gap between Eidos and Eid Echad. Eidim are mechayv mamon, right? Where Eidim are mechayv mamon, and Eid Echad can only be mechayv oshua. Especially if you say that a kshua is not a particularly significant currency, meaning it doesn't have that much intrinsic value, it doesn't reflect a major chiyuv. For example, say the Gemara in a number of places speaks about a kshua in terms of lahafis daitel shabal abayis. The Gemara in Bavitzia, Nefamine, Eur Beis, and elsewhere, right, the Gemara uses this expression, Gemara in Shavuos, in the beginning of the seventh parak, Shavuos l'hafizayt al shabalabayis, to appease the balabayis. Meaning, it's not particularly, it doesn't reflect some serious obligation on your part. It's not a valuable commodity, certainly not a substitute for momo. Rather, Shavuos l'hafizayt al shabalabayis, right, so that there shouldn't be strife. We want to appease the other party, we want to assuage his anger a little bit, or his doubts in some cases, and therefore we at least impose a shavua on this guy. We don't just give him the money, or we don't let him get off scot-free, right? We appease the balabayas by imposing a shavua. If you look at it that way. So a shavua, I say, is hardly something major, something significant. It's hardly a an equivalent of chi of mom. And if you take that view, so basically, Eid Echad is very limited. Eid Echad works in Isurim, so Eid Echad works in Shavua and Mamon. I'm not saying it's exactly the same. Maybe it's a little more. After all, we are corresponding it to real Chi of Mamon. But the point is, again, you're going to accentuate the gap, the difference. Komokum Shashayim, Mechayim, and Mamon, that's real. Eid Echad, all it can do is Nebuch, be mechayev v'rishua l'haf v'saito shabal habayis. Now, if that's true, you'll understand, number one, that there might be exceptions to that rule. For example, there might even be places where, in parallel, if you have two edim, you'll be mechayev mamon, and eidachon will not even be mechayev shua. If that's true, we won't lose any sleep over it, because the whole point of the statement is to accentuate, again, the distance between eidachon and shnayim. So if it's usually true that it's mechayev shua, and in some cases it's not even mechayev that, right, so that'll just underscore even more forcefully the difference between them. What am I talking about? What do I mean? For example, the Rishonim point out in Shavuos, from Nachnem and Aleph, that it isn't always true, or it seems like it isn't always true. Eidachon is not mechayev shua in when it comes to karka, right? But say the Din Torah is about a piece of karka, real estate. And all year in Chesed Sabbatim, we've been dealing with real estate. Let's say there's a dispute about a piece of real estate. Now, if there are two witnesses, that'll carry the day, right? Let's say there's only one witness, so there's going to be a chiyuv shua. Well, prove the halacha is ein nishbayim ala karkos. We don't swear in matters of karka. It's a special limud, mishnah masachet shavuos. So if ein nishbayim ala karkos, it's not really true that kol makom sheshnayim mechayev and also mamon eidachon mechayev shua. Right. Now that's a question that Yerushalmi already notes this. Bali Tosus and the Rush in Shavua Saf Mem Amad Alek are bothered by it, but probably we won't lose so much sleep over it. Why? Because as some of the Rishonim explain, it's true, it's a discrepancy, but it's an explainable discrepancy. Meaning, the problem of Enish Bayim Ala Karkos is not because of the lack of effectiveness of the Eidachon. It's special din that there's no shua on karka. So as much as, in other words, if there's a difference between, the difference here is not so much the difference between shnayim edim and Eidachon, the difference is between mamon and shua. There's a separate din, the English boy malakakos. If there was a special halacha that ain't is going through a echad al karkos, but in general you're nishba al karkos, and we'd say, what's going on? What happened to the equation? Meaning, this is a category which is shayach, it's applicable to karka, and yet ein echad isn't able to deliver for shvua the same way that shnayim is able to deliver for mamon. But it isn't true. The real halacha is that the reason Eidachon is not mechayev shua b'karka is because in general there's no such thing, no chalos of shua l'karka in the Torah. So it isn't really it's an exception, but it's not a disturbing exception. However, there's another possible exception, or two more. Yerushalmi says, Ein nishba, ein eidachad mechayev shvua b'knas. But we know there's a difference between mamonos and knasos. By keren, when you steal something, gneva, and kefa. By kefa is a knas. Dalad vehei, a knas, shoshim shalavid, a knas, all sorts of knasos of the Torah. So if you have shnayim edim, two edim come to court, they testify. So that will be mechayev you to make knas. Let's say an Eid Echad comes to court and testifies. Right? Eid Echad comes to court and testifies that you stole an object, right, and you should pay kefa. So on the Karen part, you should take a shvua. But as far as the kefa is concerned, or anything which is just knas, ein nishbon. That's what the Rishalmi says. Now that already is a little trickier. Is there a din English bayim ala knasos? Or is this a din that Eidachon is not mechayev knas? So number one, there are people who deny completely the whole story. So Yerushalmi in Shavuos, the beginning of the sixth parak, Tosfos Beit Peretz and implicitly Tosfos and certain Tosfos Shams in Bava Kamma and Daf Mem Vav, I'm sorry, Daf Mem Aleph, I think, deny this completely. They say it's not true. And in Echad will be Mekayim Yeshua even on Knossos. Can't say Mishal. But there's an interesting line in the Tosfos. Tosfos Mem Vav of Aleph in Bava Kamma says, seems to say, that you won't be Nishba in the case of Knossos. And the Rashba is even more explicit. The Rashba says the purpose of a Shua ultimately, and this is a Chiddush of the Rashba, but it's an important perspective, is Kadesha Yoda. Why do you ask people to take a Shua? Right? So the truth is, there could be various explanations. I mentioned before, one view based on the Gemara, Lahaftis Aitzel Shabbala Bias. Not worth that much, but it, you know, it's a way of throwing you know, some sort of compensation in the direction of the Balabais. An opposite perspective would be to say, you know what, a Chiyush Shavua is a very serious commodity, right? It has a monetary value. It's maybe even a monetary equivalence. Maybe Shavua is a p'tur for Momo. That's the opposite view. We're going to get back to in just a second. In between those two views there are more shades, but one of the shades is the purpose of a Shmua is a kind of deterrent. It's to motivate you to admit, for all people are queasy about taking Shmuas, they should be, right? Shmua v'shem Hashem and Benzin, right? The Gemara speaks about Kol Olam Nizdazeya, the Gemara in Shmuas, everybody like is shaking, trembling, you know, when it comes to the idea of taking a Shavua. The Gemara has a whole discussion about Mitziah, or the Kashra Mamona, Kashra Shavuasa. Like, what's the purpose of having people who you're not sure whether they're lying or not lying, you think that they might be stealing from you, you know, we can't, well, at least we'll have them swear. Right? Well, the Shach, right? If you really think he's a liar, then he's going to lie in the Shavua. If he's not a liar, you don't need a Shua. So what's the purpose of the Shua? So the Gemara has a whole discussion about Mitzvah in the first paragraph, where the Chashir HaMamona is Chashir HaShua. You might think he's a thief, but you might think that a, you know, a Shua Bezdin will motivate the truth. People are, you know, are legitimately a little more afraid of a Shua Bezdin. So the point is, that one of the purposes of the Shavua, this is what the Rashba zeroes in on, is Kadesh Yoda. That's not the Hafiz Taitel Shabbala Bayis. It's also not the view that a Shavua, you know, is something which is of intrinsic value and maybe even convertible to a monetary value. It's something in between. So the Rashba says that's the reason why Eid Echa doesn't work with Knossos. Because what's the purpose of the Shavua? Kadesh Yoda. But in the case of a Knas, we have a rule. Mode of a Knas, Patur. Torah says, Asher Yarshiu Nelokim. The law of Marshia is optional. When it comes to Knasos, if he admits it, especially without pressure, right? He's Patur. So we're going to impose upon him a Shua so that he'll admit it. But if he admits it, he exempts himself. So there's no point to the Shua. That's the Rashi. But I say other Rishonim take different views. What I'm trying to show is that there are different perspectives on the relationship between Eid Echad and Shnayim, right? Shavua and Mamon, and that these reflect on both the power of Eid Echad and Shavua. A third possible exception, which highlights all of this. There's a debate among the Rishonim when it comes to Shavuos Eid Echad, do you need a Tainas Vadai or not? Again, it's going to talk about this in two places, one in the beginning about Mitzvah, and the other in Shavuos right there on Daf Mem Amud Aleph. Normally, in a regular Din Torah, you have a Bal Davar making an accusation, and then it comes to court, and there's a question of the evidence. And says to me, you owe me money, you're in my land, you took my object, you didn't repay me. Right? This is a story of the Bali Dvarim, the taina of each one of them. And then there's the evidence level, right? The Eidus in court. Shneidim, Eidachad, as the case may be. What happens if there is no Tainas Vadai at all, or no Taina at all? Let's say the Taina comes from the Eidachad. Eidachad comes to court. Well, let's say it was two Eidim. Two Eidim come to court. They say, we witnessed Reuven stealing money from Shimon. Now Shimon doesn't know anything about it. He didn't bring Reuven to court. Do we need a Tainas Vadai of Reuven in order for Eidim to convict Shimon? Certainly not. However, is the same true with regard to the Chiyuv Shmua of an Eid Echad? Echad comes to court, he says, Shimon stole money from Reuven. Reuven doesn't know anything about it, he wasn't home that day. He just doesn't know. Or he's, Shema, yeah, I saw something, you know, there's room for doubt. And the Eid Echad is the basis of the bar. Does that work or not? So now the Rishonim say, based on the principle of the Gemara and Shavuah, it's called Mokom Sheshnayim B'chayvin Osam Mamon, Eid Echad B'chayvo Shavuah. I say, listen, if Shnayim were going to be B'chayvin Mamon, would that work? Even without a Tainus Vadai of the Toveya? Certainly. So, for the principle to be meaningful, Hu Adin, the same thing is true with regard to the Chiyuv Shvua of an Eid Echad. That's the view. However, the Rimigash and the Rambam disagree. It's their opinion that Shvua's Eid Echad is only applicable in a situation where there's a Tainus Vadai. Eid Echad alone cannot create a Tainus Vadai and to be Mechayim Shua. So once again, we have this interesting situation, both in terms of the actual parallel between an Echad and Shnayim Eidim, which we're pursuing. More importantly, what are the implications of an Echad vis-a-vis Shnayim Eidim? What we're really saying when we talk about this rule, Kol Makom Shnayim Mechayim Noso, Mamon an Echad Mechayim Shua, is to show you the gap. See how different an Echad is from Shnayim Eidim? And then the exceptions, while they're still problematic, but they're not so problematic. If the whole point is to show you how inferior an Echad is to Shnayim Eidim, so then if they're in addition to the fact that there's Shvua here and there's Mamon there, that there are also some exceptions to the rule to throw in, not the end of the world. However, as I said, there is a second way to read that Gemara. That second way is to say, is Shvua quite insignificant, or maybe even a Shvua is a Ptur Mamon, and when the Gemara says Kol Makom Sheshnayim Mechayvin Osam Mamon and Echad Mechayv Shvua, they're not trying to accentuate the gap. The opposite, what they're trying to show is that a Echad is really Mechayv Mamon. The only thing is a Ptur, but that's why wherever you have one you have the other, because basically a Echad is also Eidus. Hi, what about Karka? Like we said before, Karka is a different Karka in Yishvayim ala Karko. It's nothing to do with the weakness of Eid Echad. What about Knas? Either it's not true, or there are other reasons in Knas. If that's true, so then we can much better fit in the view of the Rashbam, the view of Rashi and Shavuos, especially the view of the Rambam, that when it comes to the Shvua Eid Echad, another big Kiddush, and that is, it's not enough to clarify Al Yedei Shvua. What you need to do is destroy the opposition. If you don't character assassinate and completely contradict the Eidus of the Eid Echad, then the Eid Echad will turn into a Chiyuv Mamon. Or the Chiyuv Mamon of the Eid Echad will apply and there will be no basis for the Ptur Shvua, if you want to call it that way, right, is only applicable as a function of destroying the Eid Echad.
What's the basis of that? Of having to be destroying the Eid Echad?
Well,
the may have nothing to do with that.
When?
The original example is, yes, I took the money, but
well, we'll try to, that's where it comes from. It actually comes from that case. Why can't you be nishba and say, yes, I took the money, but I was retrieving my own object? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, right.
So what the Rambam and Rashbam and Rashi are saying is, what's wrong with it is that you're not destroying the Eid Echad. Anything less than destroying the Eid Echad, anything that leaves the Eid Echad as a, if you admit that the Eid Echad is credible, then we treat him as Shayim. That's in the Gemara how they know this. What's the ideological, philosophical, legal basis? What I'm suggesting is the idea that, well, I'll take a step back. The Nesivos asks the question. In general, Sos asks the question. Nesivos asks the question, why, if we believe Edim as facts, so why do we need to?
Well, you give reasons because each has its own eccentricities.
That's the Nesivos' answer. The filtering of the, let's say, the perception issues and so on. That's the Nesivos' answer to that question. But the assumption of the question is, let's say, that that point aside, in terms of just pure credibility, there's really no difference between 1 and 2. Just as there's no difference between 2 and 100. Now, you could argue that. You could say, you know what? Because of the filtering, or because of, you know, 1 is idiosyncratic. 1 is an opinion. 1 is an individual. Right? Once you have 2, that's already a different, that's qualitatively different level. I'm totally fine with that. But what I'm suggesting is that there are a group of Rishonim who will say that in principle, what we do is we allow, and there's an exit strategy. Because we're worried about the perception issue, because we're worried that here and there there's a bad apple, a liar, you know, who's taking advantage of Cheskas Kasrus in the system. So because of that, you need an out strategy. You need a p'tur. But it's not because intrinsically Eid Echad is necessarily inferior to Shnayim Edim. Yeah, the basic idea, if 100 is no better than 2, so on a certain level, 2 is no better than 1. Except that, because he's 1, because of the fact that there's no corroboration, etc., so we make conditional allowances. But those allowances don't reflect a qualitative difference in the level of credibility, according to this perspective. They just are allowances to establish whether we're going to apply the shame aid here or not. Now, if that's the case, then the chiyuv shvuah is basically a p'tur, not a chiyuv. And then our whole perspective on mechuyav shvuah of any chazal shavah mishalim changes. And the, if you take the first perspective, which is a shvuah is a shvuah, and it's maybe even only allowed to cite to shabbat abayis. So how do you ever explain, how do you justify b'tok she'ena yachal yishava mishalim? Can't swear, the Golden Covenant becomes a monetary obligation. That's a huge leap. How does it assume that value which it doesn't really have? Right? The answer is, it does that by virtue of other factors. Maybe it's suspicious that he's not swearing, or that he doesn't know to swear, or that he claims to, but then you have to have those circumstances. We talked a little about that last week. Havalei l'meida, lo havalei l'meida. A choshurin, somebody who's, we won't let him swear, but he wants to swear. Right? All sorts of cases. But if we take the view that, essentially, Eid Echad has the potential to be viewed as real Eidus. Except that, you know, we do want to build in a little protection. Right? So, there has to be the ability to go for the jugular. If he can destroy the, he's a more vulnerable, he's an aid once he gets through the process. Right? But he's vulnerable to begin with. Then we can explain the Chuyashua and the Chalishan Mishalim easily. because the shu'a itself was just a p'tur. It was a way of getting you out of the problem. But the wherewithal, the means to be mechayev your mamon, al-yedei echa, that existed all along. You don't have to create that or convert that. So then we have a whole different perspective. Now the Rambam's own view, I'm going to stop here in 30 more seconds, but is, I think, a little more complicated. And that's for two reasons. On the one hand, the Rambam is the architect of this whole idea, even more so than the Rashbam and Rashi, although that they believe in it too, of this whole idea of going for the jugular. If you leave him standing, you treat him like two eight. And not only that, there's a very famous Rambam, the Rambam in Perek Hey, Hasek Halacha Gimel, Hasek Seidus, Rambam says that Echad B'Shvua has to be a kosher, has to be a male, has to be somebody who could be part of the team of two eight. Katsunisha says, how do you know that? What does it say that anywhere? It's an interesting issue. Again, the Rambam knows it because the Rambam thinks that that's the whole point. The whole point is that a Echad has the ability to really be Mechayim Mamon. It's in the Vedas. Of course it has to be kosher. That's one story in Rambam. There is, however, another side. And that is as follows. I mentioned that the Rimi Gash and the Rambam are both of the opinion that for an Eid Echad to be Mechayim Veshvua, there needs to be a Tainus Bari. The Eid Echad himself cannot be the source of the Tainus Bari, of the claim. That, actually, points in the opposite direction. Namely, if the Rambam really felt 100% that an Echad is Mechayim Mamon as long as he exists, so why can't he substitute for Tainus Bari as well? That's one Rambam. And one Rambam, one other Rambam, just to throw into the mix before I speak about them for one more minute, there's a Rambam of Gzela, Tarek Dalet, where he talks about the Nasik and Ravaba issues, where the Rambam says as follows. The Gemara beginning of Bab Metzia talks about what we call the Din of Rav Chiya. The Din of Rav Chiya is, we know that Mordech B'Miktzas is Chai V'Shua. I say, you owe me $100. And you say, I don't owe you $100, I only owe you $20. Right? That's called Mordech B'Miktzas. And he takes a Shua D'Oraisa. So the question is, what if you have the following case? Not Mordech B'Miktzas, but Edim who testify about Miktzas Achiv. Guy says, you owe me $100. The other guy says, I don't owe you a penny. And they come along and they say, we know that he owes him at least $30. So the Gemara says, above Matthia, Shaloi he hodos piv gdola mehados heida. Right? Meaning if he was moda on 30, he'd have to pay. He'd have to be nishba. So if Edom come along and they testify about 30, he also has to be nishba on the rest. That you can create the equivalent of moda mikvah through Edom. And we paskin that way, and Rambam paskins that way. What happens if you pay miktas because of mitol sheni chol shavu mishalim? In other words, there's a din Torah about $100. The guy denies it, right? But he has to pay 30 or 50 because of the rule of mitol sheni chol shavu mishalim. And in that case, let's say. So in that situation, do we treat it like Rav Chiya? Do we say, oh, that's like Mordech B'Miktzas, he has to be nishba on the other half? So the Rambam says no. Mostly Gonim and other Rishonim said yes. That would seem to say that even though the Rambam is a strong advocate of the power of Ein Echad, there are limits to the power of Ein Echad. Number one, you need a Tainus Vaday. And number two, it can't serve the function of what we call the din of Rav Chiya. And if you pay because of Bitok, it's not the same as paying because of our Edim. Even though the reason that you're paying is because of Eid Echad. What seems to come out from the Rambam then is one, a little bit of a more complicated view. And that is that while Eid Echad is a form of Edus, there's still a difference between Edim and Edus. Between Edus, Eid Echad and Edus of Shnayim Edim. Now, when Yaakov Eid Echad B'ish, the Kalavan of Kolchatas has two dinim. Number one, the ability to destroy the Eid Echad and thereby to render him not even as Edus. And number two, the idea that even in a full-blown aid, even though it's edus, but it's still not aided. Now, certain dinim that require edus, other dinim require aidim. Just as, for example, edus of a star is not perfect for everything. The fact that there are exit strategies and that it isn't treated as 100% factual, that in itself also indicates a certain limit even to the edus aspect of Eidecha. So the Rambam's view ends up being very consistent with a lot of the evidence, but very subtle from the legal point of view. So much for Naskar Rabab. I want to wish everybody a good and productive summer. And Mirz Hashem will continue. We'll try to figure out the schedule in September.